Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
New Books in Economics, brought to you by EAEPE, the European Association for Evolutionary Political Economy.
Welcome to this new episode of New Books in Economics, part of the New Books Network. I am Andrea Bernardi from Oxford Brookes University, and I am here today to talk about a very provocative book of political economy. This was published by Routledge in 2017 and with a very strong title, The Fascist Nature of Neoliberalism, co-authored by Andrea Micocci and Flavia Di Mario. Welcome, Flavia. Please tell us something about your co-author, Andrea, the late Andrea Micocci. I can introduce yourself already. Flavia is a doctoral student at London Middlesex University. She is working on a project on industrial relations. She has got an MBA from Link Campus University in Rome, and she has got a BA in political sciences from Lewis University in Rome. Welcome, Flavia. What about Andrea Micocci?
Andrea Micocci has got his PhD from the University of York under the supervision of Alex Kalinikos. He has taught in several Italian and international universities, and he has given a very, very original contribution into the economic theories, especially those theories that trying to address the theoretical limitation inherent to capitalism. He's the author of several books, included A Historical Political Economy of Capitalism After Metaphysics, published by Routledge in 2016, another book that I would like to suggest to everybody, undergraduate and graduate student, to read, Moderation and Revolution, published by Lexington in 2012, and other books like Metaphysical Capitalism, also published by Lexington in 2009, and anti-Hegelian reading of economic theory, published by Mellen in 2002. As you said, Andrea has passed away last year, and he has been my supervisor during my MBA. He was also my co-author, and he has been a great source of knowledge and inspiration for many students and intellectual in all the arenas that he has attended. So I had the chance, and I was very lucky to work with him on the themes that we also address in our book.
Okay, clearly a radical thinker. And let's start from a very radical beginning of your book, which starts at the introduction, at the very, very early pages, with a quote from no less than Benito Mussolini. This was from his first speech as a prime minister in 1925. And the quote is, "The financial problem is the crucial problem. We must balance the state budget as soon as possible." So this is a very quick introduction to one of the topics of the book, which is the relationship between capitalism and fascism. Please tell us something about the core content of the book and its origin.
Thank you, Andrea. Thank you for hosting me in this session of your podcast. It's a pleasure talking to you and having the opportunity also to tell others, all your public, about the book that I co-authored with Andrea Micocci. That, as you already mentioned, has a very strong title, that is The Fascist Nature of Neoliberalism, a book published by Routledge in 2017. Well, thank you also for mentioning the quotation we want to address at the very beginning of our book. Mussolini was a fanatic, let's say, of budget. And also today, we have a lot of our society and political economy that is built around budget. Because, as you know, for example, in these days, all the European countries are discussing about the ratio debt GDP, which is assumed by everybody to be a good ratio for measuring our wealth. But is it like that? So the problem with what is presented to us from capitalism as we know it, just like from fascism, is that these ideas, the idea of a balanced budget, of the idea of the ratio, the goodness of some economic ratio, should still reflect the reality. Meanwhile, we don't want to address we don't give value at all to other ratios like the inequality ratio. So that according to us, is an intellectual choice. And is an intellectual choice that we make, first of all, on individual basis, and then on a large collective basis. That is what we want to address in the fascist nature of neoliberalism, which is an effort that we have made to explain how contemporary neoliberal capitalism builds on the metaphysic and myths in theory and operate through managerial class. So we believe that neoliberalism has three main connotations, and these connotations are metaphysic, fascism, and managerialism. So metaphysic has a very central position in our conceptualization and explanation of contemporary capitalism, and it explains why empty concept has replaced ideas and how individual mentality is driven to accept and practice antisocial and anti-human behavior, just like I was mentioning you about accepting the ratio of GDP and debt, instead of taking the ratio of inequality as something that our policies should address for our society.
Okay, so we have already introduced several topics. Let's start with some more order. Let's say, for example, how do you define capitalism?
So our conceptualization of capitalism is based on 20 years of Andrea Micocci's work, which is which, as I was telling you right now, was is essential, the concept of metaphysics, that we understand as a justified, socially justified, tranquilizing and fluid intellectuality that is grounded on the pretense that it corresponds to some individual tendency and the nature of human being. That's the reason why, in other words, by itself is this concept, just like the budget, insufficient to be practiced and imposed unless they are backed in fascist behaviors and practice. So basically, we believe that capitalism is reduced to management of the economy by the states, as we are all see, and that they fight each other with their own national policies. Some of these policies are coordinating. And at the end of the day, or at the end of the year, they wonder at the independence of finance, and also how finance is predominant in their economies. So we also pose the problem of the state intervention and regulation in capitalism, the predominance of finance, and how the predominance of finance is related to the metaphysics. Because the problem of today's neoliberal capitalism is that as a mode of production, the metaphysic is so preponderant that it has erased the material production value and replaced it with the metaphysic of the financial system. And all this engine to function needed a rentier class and a managerial class, which has been the visible executioner of this will. And this has been in various ways been imposed by austerities or by other kind of policies, let's say worldwide, especially after the latest crisis.
Okay, so let's move now to the next big topic, which is neoliberalism. How do you define it and how do you use it in this discussion?
Well, what we want to say in this book is that, also the reason why we also review some of the literature and we also account of some definition of neoliberalism, is that neoliberalism has not brought anything new into the way that capitalism behaves, but and also that he has not diminished or changed the way that, as I was telling you, the fascist feature of capitalism manifest. But what neoliberalism has done, he has enhanced the capacity of capitalism to organize in practice and simplify in theory. That is the characteristic of metaphysical capitalism, because as we see, neoliberalism tend to build on what we call pensiero unico, a unique single way of thought, which is imposed as to be coherent. So on the same times, neoliberal ideas pretend to manage the economic and the social dimension of our human life and make a healthier society for all. But this is eventually against what we are all witnesses in our reality. So that's why we believe that metaphysical capitalism explains a lot of the problem that we have today. That is the problem of how the metaphysics is basically an anti-human and anti-individual mentality that reiterates the acceptance and practice of collective repression in anything that is assumed to be outside capitalism and fascism. So, in other words, today everything that is, let's say, a capitalist diversity is admitted, but what is not admitted are capitalist alternatives. And that's how we have a so homogenized world where mainstream is so preponderant, because all these set of ideas are back in an old fascist scheme that is made of concepts like meat, planning, nation, family, and other concepts that, when we come to analyze it, are really vague and uncertain compared to the reality that we live. I hope it's clear enough.
Well, okay, so let's define even more the connection between those three themes that you have introduced. Let's say capitalism has been with us for at least 200 years. Fascism was deployed first at the beginning of last century. And neoliberalism, has been with us, has been defined in the past maybe 40, 50 years. Is it the first time that those three enemies that you identify in capitalism, neoliberalism, and fascism are together?
What we are trying to do is having, as you pose it in a historical perspective, we have also tried to take back the contribution of scholars from the time when capitalism and fascism have raised to address the issue that are rising with the neoliberalism. The first point that capitalism, neoliberalism, and fascism have in common. They have in common historically that the way that they came into power of social relation is based on their own inconsistent theory and set of concepts. As I was saying before, capitalism, neoliberalism, and fascism are for themselves, in many of their ideas, very self-contradictory. For example, capitalism supposed to be either for being against wars, but a lot of capitalist countries practice wars, and for peace. So in capitalism can coexist different practice, even if there is an official communication where there is a coherent idea about, let's say, what to do regarding external relation. So in the same way, I can give you an example about fascism and the way that, let's say, in the fascist manifesto, you have a principle like the elimination of private property and intermediate bodies. And then in the fascism regime, you have a corporation. So the same for neoliberalism. In neoliberalism, you have a coexisting, incoherent ideas. that are widely admitted. So the first point that these three regimes have in common is the inconsistency of their set of concepts. After this come the way in which impositive concept and the narrative coming from it are given to the masses of people, because we know that this idea needs and imply an organic society and are often built around the concept of nation. And we see that the role for all the social entities are turned into a kind of business ethics, and so everything is reduced to what capitalism that must be coherent with capitalism and not allowing alternatives. The means by which all this is done is metaphysic, and the metaphysic, the concept that I just described to you.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Is this relevant to capitalism in general, or does it work only with our current capitalism, which others define managerial capitalism?
Okay.
Is it a bigger problem than the managerial capitalism or not?
Of course, that we believe, as I was telling you before, metaphysics of capitalism, we understand it as being already a component of capitalism, let's say classical or Fordist capitalism. And what is in neoliberal capitalism different is that metaphysics has, let's say, a more powerful role in simplifying the theory of capitalism and the way it operates. And metaphysics as a concept has a role in the way that managerialism operates. Because we admit that managerialism is the result of management and ideology, but that was also true under normal circumstances of capitalism. The difference of managerialism under neoliberal capitalism is that the components of management and ideology are having a multiplier, and the multiplier is the metaphysic of capitalism. To put it in a practical example, we can have a manager. This manager can assume all the practices that are relevant and dominant in management, plus he might have an ideological background. And what he makes it, let's say, manifesting the expression of managerialism is also a component where is he operates or she operates in by promoting and practice an intellectuality that, as I was telling you before, is anti-individual and anti-human, because he wants to just replicate the acceptance and the practice of a repression of anything outside, whether a corporate organization, in particular, or capitalism more in general. So that is the original and the originality of the definition that we give of managerialism, and we also give example of managerialism. We quote a speech that is particularly relevant for the brutality of the arguments given to the way managers should behave towards their employees. And this speech that was given to a top manager of an Italian public governed company, then was not addressed at all by the Italian media, even if the CEO has to excuse for this speech. So the point is that we see how in neoliberal capitalism and managerialism, in the same corporation, two or more different ideas of managing HR can coexist. The one that is embodied by the CEO, that is manifesting some brutal ideas on how to change the organization, together with a code of conduct, a corporate social responsibility policy, a whole what the good and let's say human favorable practice of HR are trying to promote as progressive.
Okay, now I would like to challenge you on two things, the use or abuse of two concepts. Let's start from neoliberalism. It is often, very often described as a dominant idea in so many fields, and so apparently neoliberalism is everywhere. The European Union, a neoliberal project. The Euro, a neoliberal project. The knowledge economy, urban planning, a neoliberal project. The dominant trends in labor market regulation, clearly another neoliberal paradigm. Or what else? Even, I don't know, the journal rankings, the evaluation research, neoliberal projects. So my question, my provocation is, and you use this expression as a key word for your book, is there a possibility that we are abusing of the idea of neoliberalism, and that we see it everywhere, and that we see a mastermind deploying it in every aspect of our life and in every policy, and that we see it as a truly dominating paradigm?
Yes, I much agree with you about the very much exposure of the term neoliberalism. That is also related, I think, to the some part of the academia. Let's say I believe that in some you mentioned about the neoliberal projects is true, and What is also true is that the way that we also talk about neoliberalism or contemporary capitalism or whatever we call it is also a way for without, let's say, really the denouncing the roots of this system, is also a way to reiterate the acceptance that I was talking about before. In the sense that a lot of also the speculation of capitalism is not really addressing, let's say, is much compartmentalized into discipline. What we are trying to do in this book and was also a merit of Andrea Micocci and all he has done, not only in the academia, but also in the society, was to bring economics outside the economic discourse, which means to reconnect economics to society. That's why we also try to give a lot of practical examples of how these the acceptance and the practice of neoliberal politics are admitted by academics, but also decision maker and any kind of social organization. So it's very difficult to talk outside neoliberalism, but is also a mean of talking and debating about it to find a way for alternatives. The problem might also be that there is a disproportion between how much is the neoliberalism system analyzed and the amount of potential solution for problems of neoliberalism are brought by the different actors I've just mentioned before.
Okay, so second keyword, fascism. Are we abusing its use in defining fascist contemporary governments, for example, I don't know, the Italian one, or defining fascist the newly elected Brazilian president? Is there a risk in abusing, of course, not for intellectual purposes like your political economy and philosophy book, but in the daily language and in the daily political language, is there a risk that we are abusing, we are using too often the word fascism to define contemporary events and contemporary characters that not necessarily are truly fascist from a literary point of view?
As you are saying, if it is an abuse, of course, it must be denounced. The point is also, when we want to say this government is fascist or not, sometimes, for example, we have a recent Italian debate from prominent historians and other journalists which have tried to say that in Italy there is no a fascist regime, and they try to review some of the historical facts that has happened in the past, in the last century. But this is not what a lot of people in, especially the grassroots and urban communities are claiming as fascist. The point is what we claim as fascist is that communities in terms of either brutality or indifference. So it must not be that fascism must necessarily manifest under a brutal character. Let's say the Brazilian government has made fascist statement. The Italians, the Italian one, maybe too. The point is the reality of not only these two governments, but the wider context of all this country. Let me just give you an example. In London, you have a monument to the memory of the Jewish children rescued during the Nazi regime, the Kindertransport. So during the fascist and the Nazi time, the Second World War, there were so-called civilized nation that through agreement between governments and communities, in that case where the Jewish community were able to rescue children from being killed by the Nazi regime. Today, we are not able to rescue children which are in Libya or in Syria or in other country where their life is at risk. We want to claim ourselves as a non-fascist regime when we practice a fascist policy on the themes of immigration, urban policies, and so on. So this will be seen on the historical perspective. But what we can see now is that there are several denounces of what is ever happening at socioeconomic level, not only the inequality, but also the way that economists and in general the economic field has been denying the social impacts of the current neoliberal policy. So that is the real social conflict that in some case is emerging as a conflict. In some other case is incorporated by the populist or so, if you want to call it fascist regime that are now widespread in some countries of Europe or South America or more widely in different, in current ways worldwide.
Okay, now let's move to my final question, which is what about your future project? What are you working on now?
Right now I'm working on my PhD, which is a comparative study on restructuring across construction industry in Italy and the UK. Is a very interesting study about the construction of the two underground lines in Rome and in London. It was a great opportunity to us. We are always trying in this effort to link economic, political economy and sociology and industrial relation, academics with society. So it's a very interesting part of the work I'm conducting now, together with my usual engagement with some social organization, trade unions. In Italy, for which I'm conducting an independent research on changes at workplace, and my engagement for an NGO called Junior Art Club, for which I dedicated almost two decades of my work. So in different ways, all this effort of understanding our society with the lens of economics are merging in the different aspects of my work.
Well, good luck for this project and congratulations for your publication, your book. You have already published journal articles and other works, but for a young scholar like you are, this is already a very big achievement. Congratulations and thank you very much for being with us today. This was The Fascist Nature of Neoliberalism, published by Routledge in 2017 and authored by Andrea Micocci and Flavia Di Mario. Thank you very much for being with us, Flavia.
Thank you to you very much and to your audience.